Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
That championship lead that's 9 points could easily be 61 points, but for largely a bit of luck.
Jakesy, do you think this is now a mental game?
Final rounds of the World Championship are always a mental test. You don't get to be world champion unless you can withstand the pressure.
Now there's 10 races to go and we can sort of see the finishing line. It'll start to loom larger and a small moment could cost you a world championship.
The emotional roller coaster of Hamilton this year has been hard to follow.
The potential is so much better than these miserable results look. We're not used to Lewis making these sort of mistakes, which I think shows the pressure he's under.
How much is the local support going to help Max?
He's up against it, but I do think it's probably the perfect way for Max to come back after the summer break and a tough race in Hungary.
Are you Team Yuki?
I think he's definitely fighting for his Formula One career.
If we were giving out awards mid-season, Rookie of the Year?
Hadjar.
I'm now thinking Bortoletto.
I'm with you.
The recency bias is incredible.
There are 10 races and 3 F1 sprints to go. Formula One is back after the summer break, and what a thrilling title fight we've got in store. Welcome everyone to F1 Nation's preview of this weekend's Dutch Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson, and joining me on the show is former Renault driver Jolyon Palmer and his teammate in the F1 TV commentary box, lead commentator Alex Jakes. Guys, the summer break is over. How are you both?
Very good. Well rested. I did enjoy the summer break, but it's time to get back to business, isn't it? 10 races to go, and there's a lot at stake.
Yeah, there is indeed. Also, another broadcast from F1 with us two on it. I mean, that's the end of the summer break right here, isn't it? Straight back to work. But as you say, we've got a great title running to come. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Quick word on the summer break. I mean, will the drivers have been switching off these past 3 or 4 weeks? Or is it difficult to do that mid-season, particularly if you're in the title fight?
I'd switch off. I think it's so intense, the season, and particularly if you're in a title fight. You know, the pressures, you turn up every week, it's the similar questions. The world doesn't change that much when there are so many races packed in. But you have this 3-week break. The team's literally shut down for a couple of weeks, so there's no communication. And when I was driving, I buzzed up Kilimanjaro for a week, and I was out of phone signal for 7 days halfway up a mountain in Tanzania, and it was the best way to clear my head. So I don't think anyone's done that, but I do think it's a nice time to get away and refresh, because you need the energy for the running.
But do you think about racing still, even when you're up Kilimanjaro?
You got to take Kilimanjaro day by day, TC. I could switch off, to be honest. 3 weeks is a nice gap. Of course, you have some thoughts, and you have that you're always going to be thinking a little bit of, you know, ideas that come to your head, ways to beat your teammate or whoever it is. But I just think it's an important time to be able to switch off for a little bit and then get back in. But they'll still be training. They'll still be making sure that they're race fit and they're sharp turning up to Zandvoort. But it's important to be able to just have a little bit of time to get back to normality in the summer.
Jake, see, it's interesting, isn't it? Because some drivers come back stronger. And I think of Lewis Hamilton in particular. If you look at his career, he's always had a good run in at the second half, hasn't he?
Yeah, some drivers are built to finish strong in that regard. It's interesting, though, because it's quite an unusual thing to build in such a big break compared to other sporting competitions, for example. It's a key thing for the dynamic of any close season. And we're obviously going to focus on the title fight, but there's so many key battles up and down the Drivers and Constructors Championships that, yeah, a bit of a reset, especially for the rookies, I think. Absolutely key.
We'll come on to the rookies. Let's focus on that title fight. So Oscar Piastri leads his McLaren teammate Lando Norris at the top of the World Championship by just 9 points going into these final 10 races. Lando has won 3 of the last 4 Grand Prix and continues his pursuit of Oscar at a track where he converted pole position into victory last year. Let's start by talking McLaren competitiveness. Do you see this coming race weekend as a battle between the two McLaren drivers?
I think we have to, don't we? Every race now is becoming more and more dominated by McLaren. I think the rivals are generally falling away. Red Bull are dropping a long way, I think, at the moment, and I don't see that changing too much for the next few races. And they were the big threat, really, early on. You had the odd Mercedes decent performance. You had Ferrari very occasionally getting in the mix. Obviously, Leclerc is off the back of a pole position. But in terms of consistency in qualifying and the race, the two McLarens have an advantage. And I'd be quite surprised if they're not 1 and 2 again in Zandvoort.
Yeah, but in which order?
Well, that's the big question. So, you know, usually we're sitting here and I'm like, right, you said it. You know, Norris was pole. He won the race. He overtook Max as well in the race last year. So you're saying this is a Lando Norris circuit. There are other tracks where I think Oscar is going to be so good. But it's pretty much flipped the script this year. So I feel like the previous form book hasn't materialized. We had Barcelona, where I think Lando's always been really strong. And he was just playing second fiddle to Oscar a lot. Probably Austria was the one where we actually predicted that Lando would do what he did, which is win the race. But it was still really close and on a knife edge between them. So I think we sort of come into these races. In theory, I think Norris has the better form around the circuit. He's won 3 of the last 4. There's things in his favour. But in reality, it's who does the job on a Saturday afternoon, firstly, and just dials in and makes fewest mistakes through qualifying.
And Jake, see, who would you rather be right now, Lando Norris or Oscar Piastri?
You'd always rather have the points, wouldn't you? I think anyway. You mentioned the momentum, but it's momentum with fine margins, isn't it? Austria was very tight across the line. Budapest was very tight across the line. You'd always rather have the points. And more than that, I think that Piastri has been able in the first half of the season to access the best of his driving more often. So I think that's the key question for Lando in the run-in. Can Lando access the peaks like we've seen in previous years without the pressure of a title fight? Can he access the best of his driving more often? Because it's Piastri who did that in the first half of the year. So I'd rather be in his seat.
I've not switched off over the summer break this year. I've been just pouring through data and numbers. I'm not in my racing driver era now. I'm going to be washed. By the time we get to Qatar, I'm going to be no energy. I didn't recharge the batteries. But what I've been thinking is Piastri's been the better driver. And we're talking about at the fine margins, 9 points, Lando winning 3 of the last 4. But on pretty much all stats and viewing, Piastri has been the better driver so far. And I look through and I think that championship lead that's 9 points could easily be 61 points. But for largely a bit of luck. So I'm thinking there's 16 points lost in Melbourne. Both McLarens go skittling off through the gravel. Oscar's is slightly more than Lando's, but really, these, you know, you can't judge this. And it cost Oscar on the day 16 points. I'm thinking Silverstone. Tough decision. that I've not seen penalised since or before, and it cost Oscar the win. Imola, the timing of the safety car, really tough decision, and it's just a bit of bad luck. It cost them on the time only 6 points in terms of a swing. And then you've got Budapest, a great win for Lando, absorbed the pressure, did what he had to do, but he did it because he had a bad start, was in the wrong position, and then sort of got into the right strategy that Oscar wasn't given. So when you look at all those points lost, even the 2 points in the Miami sprint, where a safety car timing cost Oscar the win and gave it to Lando, there's been a lot of things that have just gone towards Lando in these first 14 races. Oscar's overall out-qualified him by a slender margin, and I think he's outraced him, and the gap could be so much more comfortable. But as it is, it's 9, and it's absolutely on for anyone.
Right, you said Oscar's the better driver. Define better for us.
Well, I'm not saying he is the better driver, but he has had the better. He's been better in these first 14 races. So, and by better, he's been faster. He's qualified ahead of Lando more often than not. It's 8-6. He's been further ahead when he's qualified. When he's been at the front, a lot of his wins have been quite comfortable. He's kept Lando at arm's length. I'm thinking China. I'm thinking Barcelona. And when he does get into that position, you feel like he's not coming under huge pressure. And for Lando's wins, Monaco was sensational from Lando. I think that's probably an absolute standout. Obviously, Austria, he had to deal with the wheel-to-wheel of Piastri as well. But in a lot of them, it's such tiny margins, and it could go his way, it could go the other way. He's obviously had Silverstone, which was at the very least a 50-50 call with the stewards. It's a roll of the dice on strategy in Hungary, and they've both sort of landed towards Norris. And I just think when you look at what goes into a race, the racecraft, I think there I'm still looking at Oscar as executing better on race day. And I think the start of the race in Belgium was... It came down to a little bit of commitment and racecraft on the first lap and the safety car restart. The start in Hungary on another day cost Norris certainly a win, possibly a chance of a podium. And you know, Piastri's still up there.
This narrative at the end of last year that Norris was the faster driver of the two, do you think we need to park that now?
Well, he was, wasn't he? It was 20-4. So the narrative was because the facts were there. Over two seasons, he blitzed Piastri. But this year, whether it's Lando not quite comfortable with the car still, or whether it's Oscar taking his game on in a third year, the stats have shifted. And I'm looking now at Oscar actually being probably slightly the better over 14 races. For me, the interesting thing is, I think over the season, it's getting closer. And the mistakes that Norris was making earlier on in qualifying, he's not been making them so much recently. It's certainly much closer. I'm thinking the Bahrain qualifying mistakes, China qualifying mistakes. You had Montreal qualifying mistakes. He put it in the wall in Jeddah. All of those ones, they're not happening. So he's doing better as the season's going on. So then we come to Jakesy's point. Can he actually find a higher ceiling than Piastri, which is where he's been for the last 2 years, or has Piastri moved his game on? And I can't tell you the answer to that at the moment.
This episode is sponsored by Trade Coffee, the number one coffee destination in the US for both hot and cold coffee drinkers. You've probably heard me rave about Trade before, because Trade is single-handedly responsible for my journey into the world of cold brew coffee. Being from the UK, it's just not something I'd really tried before. But when Trade offered to send me something from their cold brew collection, I thought, why not give it a shot? And I finally understood the hype. I picked out a bag of Cerberus. They're one of the 15 cold brew roasters Trade works with. It was described as having notes of cherry, chocolate and toffee, which sounded perfect for summer. They grind it specifically for cold brew, so all I had to do was scoop some into a jug of water, stick it in the fridge overnight, and by morning it was ready for me to just grab and go. Trade makes it easy to get quality coffee at home. They partner with top US roasters and hand-pick beans just for cold brew, so you get the smooth, rich flavour without the fuss. And the best part... you can pause deliveries when you're traveling and restart when you're back home. And for a limited time, Trade is giving 50% off a month of cold brew. That's around 60 cups of cold brew for 50% off when you go to drinktrade.com/nation. That's drinktrade.com/nation to get 50% off 1 month of cold brew. drinktrade.com/nation. Jakesy, do you think this is now a mental game, these last 10 races?
Yeah, absolutely that. Absolutely that. But fundamentally, I think the key point to underline everything Jolyn's just said there is that Piastri and Norris are running different specification front ends, which is very, very unusual. It speaks to, number one, McLaren's advantage that they're so far ahead of the field that they can run the cars in slightly different specification. But ever since Lando Norris has got that, those qualifying mistakes have disappeared, haven't they? He's had the contact in Montreal, but the qualifying mistake, since he got that slightly modified front end to try and give him a sort of 2024 feel behind the wheel in 2025, it's become much closer since then. So it is a mental game, but I don't think it's a mental game for Lando to access the best. I just think that this car from 2025 has favored Oscar and he's made a leap. So I think it naturally is towards Oscar's driving style, and he's made a leap, and now Lando has to try and claw his way back. But I don't think that's a mental test. That said, final rounds of the World Championship are always a mental test. You don't get to be world champion unless you can withstand the pressure.
Do you know how many times there's been less than a tenth separating them in qualifying out of 14 so far?
God.
Five.
Wow.
Which is actually not that many, considering we're looking at two drivers that are, you know, pole margins are tiny, but actually only the last three have all been separated by less than a tenth. And apart from that, you go to the first race in Melbourne when Norris just pit Piastri, and you go to Japan, race three. In between Japan and Silverstone, there was no margins between them that were less than a tenth. And that's, I think, due to mistakes, quite a few on Lando's part, as I reeled off, but also Oscar not hooking it up. And when Lando does hook it up, he can be clear. But what we've seen in the last few races is they are narrowing in on getting the most out of their cars. And I think, as you say, you know, the mistakes are going, the change of the front end was important for Lando. And now we are getting this convergence where we are now seeing probably the best of them at McLaren. And that's why they're dropping the rest of the field a little bit more consistently as well. So I think back to the first point was the gap could be 60. It's actually only 9 points. Will Oscar live to regret that, or, you know, rue a bit of bad luck? Because what's the football saying? If you win on your bad days, then that's how you stay in the championship fight. And I think that's kind of feels to me like what Norris has done. Now he puts that to the back of his mind. He's got 10 races to go. And if he can find that form that he's shown for the last couple of years, he's kept himself in it, hasn't he?
As the pressure builds during the second half of this season, you know, Oscar has got Mark Webber in his corner, been there, done it, Grand Prix winner. He's also got Tom Stallard as his race engineer, who is an Olympian in rowing. Lando hasn't got people who've been there, done it in a sporting context. Do you think that gives Piastri an advantage?
I think Mark Webber would be a good person to have in your corner. Just because he's been in the championship fight, he's lost it on the final day. And I would say, Mark, as an athlete, his mental toughness is right up there as well. And he's been through it. So I think that's got to be, it's got to be a help for Oscar. To what extent, I don't know. I think they'll still be thinking, at the moment, the championship's in the back of their mind. I think now there's 10 races to go and we can sort of see the finishing line. It'll start to loom larger. And with the tiny margins, any incident will become suddenly a much bigger problem for either driver to have. So it's natural the pressures will go up.
JP, as a driver, when you were battling for championships, you know, I'm thinking GP2 in particular, how does the pressure affect you? Do you just tighten up? It doesn't flow so well behind the wheel. Do you start overthinking it, making changes to the car that are unnecessary?
I think you can tense up a little bit. In GP2, I handled it pretty well, and I was quite enjoying poking the Felipe Nasr, was my rival at the time, because I could see him that he wasn't dealing with the pressure so well. So it was kind of an enjoyable experience, and I was always ahead in the chase, and he was the one under pressure to keep it going. I found more pressure in 2016 when I was trying to keep my seat at Renault, and I was right there with K-Mag, and we were neck and neck in qualifying. But the qualifying is probably where you feel the pressure the most, really. Qualifying and race starts, because they are like, they're moments that define your whole race weekend. If you have an oversteer in one corner, you have to put them all perfectly together, and a small moment could cost you a world championship at the end. So that's where I think we'll see pressure tell. I think Lando's shown in the last few races he can deal with pressure pretty well. The Budapest race was extremely good. I think he can do it, but it's the qualifying and then the race starts that are the critical areas, I think.
I think there's a lightness to Lando that hasn't always been there. I'd think the last five races, it's like he's somehow found a way of releasing the pressure, and there's a lightness to him. He seems to be enjoying it more. Maybe I think Canada was the catalyst for that, but he seems a happier person around the paddock, and maybe it's a little bit more intuitive behind the wheel as a result. I remember speaking to him after his win in Hungary on this podcast, and we were in the McLaren motorhome, and he came over, and I don't know, he was just engaging with the team. He was just so relaxed. I see Lando as a guy who has overthought an awful lot of things, and I'm not seeing that now, Jake. So do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, entirely. I think he's a driver who has to feel comfortable with the task in front of him. Saw this a lot in his GP2 title challenge up against Alex Albon and George Russell, in that he was never comfortable with that car. So he was constantly fighting a rear guard action. He never got comfortable with what he had underneath him. Couldn't get the Pirelli tyres to work in that championship. When he's comfortable, he's absolutely rapid. And if he feels, I think, that he's got his team around him, that he's in a comfortable place. You've got to remember as well, he's not been a title contender for very long. Max Verstappen was never going to lose 81 points, was he, against anyone? Max Verstappen is not going to blow that title lead against anyone. And so that was almost a dress rehearsal. Everyone, I mean, he went in as the bookmakers' favourites at the start of the year, and then got pretty much one of the, I think, at the very lower end of expectations. His first five races were right at the bottom of that. That's going to be a jolt for any elite sports person. He's got the wins. He's got the home win at Silverstone as well. He's getting more reps as being a championship contender. And I think one of the key things is he knows that it's Oscar who stands in the way. It's not Oscar or Max or another. It's just Oscar who stands in the way. So the task in the opening races might have appeared to be a three-way title battle with all of Red Bull behind Max Verstappen. If you think back to, say, Japan, for example, where he was able to hold off both. Now he knows it's the other side of the garage. It's going to be him or it's going to be me. And I think over a year as a title contender, twinned with the simplicity of it's him or me, has led to a slightly more relaxed Lando.
I think his mentality shifted, though, from feeling the weight of preseason title favourite pressure to realising Oscar's super quick and he is driving at a high level, and maybe he's not going to win it. And almost like he's letting the pressure off himself by thinking this is not Lando's to lose anymore. It's a 50-50. If he can win it, great. But when I've spoken to him straight after the race in Belgium, for example, and a few times in Parc Fermé, and I'm thinking, right, how's he going to be? Because he's just lost from pole position on that day. Other times he's just missed out in the final throes of qualifying or something. But he's always so magnanimous with it. He takes it on the chin. It's always like, well, it's another day. You know, there's plenty of races to come and it's no big deal. Moments that we're in commentary thinking, wow, this could be deciding the championship. This is huge. And you speak to him after the race and he's like, yeah, but Oscar drove better today and I'll try and get it another day. And I do feel like he's sort of the weight of championship pressures he's trying to take away from him, which could, you know, leave him in good stead in the end. But I do see what you're saying, TC, with how he's feeling under the pressure. And I think it's a decent coping mechanism for him, as proven by recent results.
Now, Max Verstappen returns to Zandvoort as a four-time world champion, but he's 97 points adrift of Piastri, having won only twice this season. He also hasn't been on the podium in the last four races, his longest streak without a top three finish in 6 years. But since Zandvoort returned to the Formula One calendar back in 2021, Max's record has been exemplary. 3 wins and a P2 in the 4 races we've had. So how much is the local support going to help Max? Or is this now going to be a really difficult weekend for him?
I mean, it's going to be a boost. It just has to be a boost. The Zandvoort crowd is one of the best in the season. He'll turn up with a spring in his step. And if he thinks that the championship's lost, which it most surely is, you can turn up to some races and think, oh, what's to play for? But actually turning up for Max in Zandvoort, he'll know what's to play for, because the crowd will be raucous if he puts it on pole and wins the race. He's up against it. But I do think it's probably the perfect way for Max to come back after the summer break and a tough race in Hungary, just to think, yeah, I can still execute a great race. And the crowd hopefully will lift him and give him that extra spur to keep pushing for it.
And will the RB21 suit Zandvoort's fast twists and turns? I mean, he was quickest through the middle sector in qualifying, I remember last year.
I think it should be okay around there. I don't see it being, one of their better, Silverstone coups of getting on pole position. Problem is, when I look at the calendar now for Red Bull, I'm seeing a lot of sort of bogey tracks for them coming up, with Monza, with Singapore and Baku, which sort of played out last year as well. The low speed performance isn't great on that car. They love the fast stuff. And Zandvoort is kind of in the middle of it. It's got a nice flow. It's got some fast corners, but it's also got some more fiddly bits. But I think with home support for Max, it's the better track for them in the next few. I would expect him to be in podium contention, but I don't think he'll have enough to take on the McLarens this time.
Jake C, where is Max's focus for the rest of this year? He's now committed to 2026 with the team. Obviously, there was the management change a couple of months ago. Is it all about rebuilding the team and getting it ready for 26? Do you think he'll forsake any wins in the remainder of this season if it gives them a better chance of doing better in 26 under the new rules?
I think he'll want to see some improvements. I mean, that was a very chastening Hungarian Grand Prix, his previous race. That's about the lowest ebb we've seen for Red Bull in a very long time on sheer competitiveness. He'll want to see the team operating sharply. But yeah, the emphasis for the entire grid is shifting to 2026. So it'll be the same for Red Bull, but they are in a rebuilding mode. He's accepted that. If he hadn't have accepted that, he would have left the team. So he knows what he signed up for. But yeah, I think he's a little bit resigned to his fate for this year, but wants to see green shoots of recovery, to use that fun sporting cliche.
And what about Yuki Tsunoda? Are you team Yuki? Do you think he's fighting for his Formula One career, or is he just fighting for a seat with Red Bull next year? And if that doesn't happen, he'll get picked up elsewhere.
I think he's definitely fighting for his Formula One career. I think Formula One and the paddock has accepted that second seat comes with severe difficulties. There were encouraging signs in Belgium. I know it's a track he's been strong at in the past, but encouraging to see that he could get that performance out of the car. I don't think the previous management rated Yuki Tsunoda. I think the current management does. And I think that can only help him in the second half of the season.
And are you confident he's locked in for these next 10 races?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's got to be, because you can't keep chopping and changing, and it's not doing anyone any good. It wouldn't do his replacement any good. So stick with him. Try and get him on an upward curve. You've got a race engineer there as well in his first full season of performing that task. See if you can see better results before the end of the year, and then make the decision, because they've got 3 good drivers on the books there that could be in that seat. But he deserves a fair shake of seeing out the season at least.
So the management change has done him a lot of good at Red Bull. I think that's clear to see, even in Spa, the first race back, and he's getting suddenly an upgraded floor just before qualifying that they wouldn't have done in the Horner era of Red Bull. So definitely Laura Mekies has a lot more faith, and he wants to see more from Yuki. And I think that's his best shot for next year as well. I think if Red Bull oust him, it's tough to see where he'll end up on the grid for the rest of it. But then you're also thinking, who then replaces him? Hadjar is obviously has been great in a rookie season. Actually, Liam Lawson's doing a pretty solid job now against Isaac as well. They're pretty evenly matched. They're not going to put Lawson back in the Red Bull, are they? After giving him just two races at the start of this year. So it has to be Hadjar. Hadjar needs to keep performing at a much higher level than Lawson to get there. And I'm not sure that he is routinely doing that at the moment. He's still looking impressive, but I think they'll probably give him another year in the junior team and the B team. At which point, maybe Yuki, if he can just find a few good races now, does get another year, new regs, new reset, and Lauren Mecchi is full-time in the leadership.
That's an interesting point about the shift in attitude by the new management, in that, you know, Lauren Mecchi appears to want to have two competitive cars, whereas Christian Horner's way of going about the business was to put everything behind Max Verstappen. How do you think Max feels about Yuki getting new parts at the same time as him, and perhaps the full weight of the team not being behind Max?
Well, he's confirmed he's staying with the team for next year. So that was the first thing that actually they needed to clear up with Laurent now at the helm. I don't know. I think because they're not in a title push, it makes a lot of sense. They're not sacrificing anything on Verstappen's car apart from potentially like extra spares. Max Verstappen isn't a driver that often needs any spares. So I think he'd be okay with it. Obviously, he will see the shift in probably more of the boss's time being spent trying to understand what's going on Yuki's car, whereas before, I think sometimes Christian barely knew he had a second driver in the field. So it's, you know, there will be these small shifts, but Max knows that he's the star there. He will still be the star there. And if Red Bull want to win next year, they will need to get the most out of Max, because if Yuki stays, he's not going to be a championship contender next year. He could be a decent support act at best for Verstappen in the new regs.
Support for today's episode comes from Square, the easy way for business owners to take payments, book appointments, manage staff, and keep everything running in one place. Whether you're selling coffees, running fitness classes, or cutting hair, Square helps you run your business without running yourself into the ground. And right now, listeners can get up to $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/F1Nation. Square works for one-location shops, pop-ups, mobile service businesses, and multi-location franchises. The software is incredibly straightforward to use. You don't need any special training. Just set it up and start taking payments instantly from anywhere. I always notice businesses that already use Square when I'm traveling. They're easy to spot because the checkouts are always smooth, receipts are instant, and sometimes you even get a loyalty reward. It just works. With Square, you get all the tools to run your business with none of the contracts or complexity. And why wait? Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/F1Nation. That's Square, square.com/go/F1Nation. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Well, maybe the more interesting battle is Ferrari and Mercedes. Ferrari are 24 points clear of Mercedes in the battle for P2 in the Constructors' Championship. The Scuderia went into the summer break off the back of a difficult weekend in Hungary. Charles Leclerc was unable to convert pole into victory, and Lewis Hamilton described himself as absolutely useless after qualifying 12th. Now, of the big four teams, Ferrari are the only one yet to win a Grand Prix this year. It looked like they were making some progress with their upgrades in the last couple of races before the break. Do you think they're going to win a race, maybe not this weekend in Zandvoort, but in the second half of the year?
Well, I said it a few races ago, didn't I? I got carried away after Canada or something, and I said, they will win a race. I'm standing by it. And I thought for two-thirds of Hungary, I thought, this is going to be it. This is going to be the one. But there'll be good tracks for them.
Are you still confident, though, JP, after the way they raced in Hungary?
You know what? At least they had performance. I know they had to, it looks very likely that they had to sort of limp their car home, having gone a bit too aggressive on ride height in the race. But at least I think they showed sort of aggressive search for performance. And they did get the pole position on a circuit that really wasn't necessarily one of their favoured ones. I don't think Zandvoort will necessarily be there either for Ferrari, but I'm looking to Monza and to Singapore as probably better chances for them with low-speed corners and better chances again. They're certainly on an upturn. Since bringing the suspension upgrades, the floor upgrades, you can see the performance is getting there. Charles is able to get quite a lot out of it now, get back towards the podium. Lewis needs to just get a rhythm back and find some form. I think he's been a bit unlucky and a bit, not executing at the right time. But yeah, I believe.
I think they've got races where they could be back in the mix. They're always very competitive in Vegas. Singapore, you have to ratchet the ride height up. Anywhere where you have to lift the car up, they could be back in business. Because it's the madness of the car that they can't, they know it's effective. They just can't run it close enough to the ground, which is a very strange situation for them to be in. But there have been, like, since they brought the update, it has been encouraging for them. They always go well in Monza, no matter what year they're having. They always go well in Monza. So I expect them to be back in the fight there. They even gave, I mean, Max was winning all the races in 2023 and they still gave him a race in Monza, didn't they? So they'll be back there.
Jake, see, what has Fred Vasseur got to do to get the best out of Lewis Hamilton? The emotional roller coaster of Hamilton this year has been hard to follow. And we've never seen him more down, I think, than he was after qualifying in Hungary. How does Vasseur deal with that? He knows Lewis well, of course, from the junior formulas. He ran him in GP2.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, because obviously we talk about his relationship with Lewis. They're totally different eras of his life, aren't they? You know, junior driver knocking on the door compared to a seven-time world champion who, quite rightly, when he asks for something, when he demands something, when he talks about reorganization, when he looks at a department of the team and goes, oh, that's not quite how I would do it. That's not quite how it was done when I was winning the titles. It's a different, you know, it's molding raw talent compared to listening to one of the great heavyweights in Formula One history. He's just not got on with this regulation of car and qualifying. The race performance hasn't been miles away. He's not miles back, if you look at the average times in qualifying, behind one of the best qualifiers in the field in Charles Leclerc. They've just got to give him a feel behind the wheel in qualifying that he's just not had in these regulations. That's key, because if you can put him in the top six, it's a totally different story for the rest of the year.
Jake, see, I don't buy this. Oh, he hasn't got on with these regulations. Okay,
he's had one pole position in these regulations.
But Jake, see, he's too good. He's too good not to be able to find a path through with these cars. He has too much ability. So therefore, why has it not worked? Why has he struggled so much with these cars?
Well, it just hasn't favoured his all action late braking style, has it? In the same way it wiped out Daniel Ricciardo looking like a competitive Formula One driver.
But we're not comparing, we're not saying Lewis Hamilton and Daniel Ricciardo are of equal ability in a racing car.
We're not, but equally, the evidence shows us that you're more competitive at 30 in Formula One than you are at 40, and he's 40 years of age. So you've got natural sporting depreciation of a driver at their absolute best. And then you twin it with a regulation set that, you know, he's got the most pole positions ever. He's got one pole position since we adopted this technical rule book in the time that, you know, Max Verstappen has scored a silly amount. Charles Leclerc has been consistently competitive. George Russell has more. George Russell has more in that Mercedes era as well. So you're looking at a couple of things meeting in the middle there. But if he can find a qualifying performance, the race pace, I think, is still there.
Small things have gone against him in the last races. I think in 2023, Hamilton was brilliant and he was up in the top three in the championship. And that is why Ferrari signed him. So, you know, the pole stats, he's not really had the right machinery. You know, Mercedes fell away at the same time as this generation of car came in. So this set of regs. But 2023, I think we saw the best of Hamilton and the second half of 22. Last year, he was already signed for Ferrari when he turned up to race for his last year in Mercedes. So you wondered where his heart was at when he was still, you know, rolling through the long season. This year has obviously been is tumultuous, moving over to Italy, racing for Ferrari. But so many drivers have done it successfully in the past. You know, it's not unprecedented for drivers to go from one working relationship to go and work successfully at Ferrari. Even if, you know, Alonso didn't win a championship, Vettel didn't win a championship, they were very good Ferrari drivers. And I think that's where Hamilton still can get to. But I think, number one, he's up against Leclerc, who is frighteningly quick. He's exceptionally fast, and he's actually probably underrated in race trim as well. He's really a top driver. Number two, in the recent races, Silverstone, I still think Hamilton could have had pole. He was flying, and he looked to be back to his best with the floor upgrade that was in, and he made a bit of a mistake in the final couple of corners, and it cost him the margin that was there for pole. He was up on Verstappen coming into the last couple of corners. Then you had Spa, which was on paper a complete disaster. But on the first lap of sprint quali, he was quite solidly up on Leclerc, but he had the oversteer coming into Stavelo, lost the lap time, and then the spin at the bus stop when he was already up against it. But the pace was still there. And then in quali, for real, he cut the corner at the top of Radion and lost a very solid lap time. We didn't see the pace of Lewis Hamilton at Spa. And in Budapest, he was missing, a couple of tenths. The Ferrari looked tricky. And suddenly they found the sweet spot in Q3. Hamilton was out. Leclerc was still in. Leclerc goes pole. It's feasible. Hamilton could have been still at least top five in qualifying that day with a deficit to Leclerc. And we'd be talking very, very differently. So his head, as you say, TC, is so downbeat because these results are abject for a seven-time world champ. But when I've been looking at it, the potential is so much better than these miserable results look for Lewis. And he just needs to find a run of not missing out in Q2 or not going over track limits at crucial times. We're not used to Lewis making these sort of mistakes, which I think shows the pressure he's under in terms of one lap pace. But he's not far from putting it together and at least being closer to Charles again.
What advice would you give him? Forget Fred Vasseur for a minute. What would Jolyon Palmer say to Lewis?
I wouldn't dare give him any advice.
But
can you imagine how that would be returned?
But
I'll tell you what I would do, Lewis, in this situation.
But remember, all the top golfers have coaches. People, I think, can, you know, you can observe what a situation, and I think you could help, actually.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how, you know, the inner sanctum of Lewis Hamilton works, but he seemed to be spiraling into doom at the end of that first block of the season. But, you know, as I said, small things are making a massive difference. And the outcome of, you know, running around trying to get one solitary point in Budapest could have been a podium battle in Hungary had he managed to just put in, thousandths that he was out in Q2. And then the Ferrari car, the wind changed and the temperatures, and it seemed to be much better. You know, Leclerc wasn't finding it easy in Hungary qualifying, and then he put it on pole. But it's keeping the motivation at the moment for Hamilton, because as you say, Jakesy, he is getting on. He is going to be frustrated at this performance, and on paper it looks so bad for him. But I still believe he has a huge amount of talent in there. I think he just needs to get a roll of solid races. Don't necessarily look for the magic in the first one back, but just get back to solid Q3 appearances, get into a position of fighting again with the Mercedes and the Red Bulls, and get that confidence back, because that's what looks to have gone missing a bit.
You see, Jolyon, you could do it. You see,
I wouldn't tell him that, though. He can tune into the podcast and listen, but I'm not going to go and find him in Zandvoort.
Jakesy, how different do you think Lewis's first season at Ferrari would have been had Pete Bonington, his race engineer at Mercedes, moved with him to Italy?
Yeah, I think he should have taken as many people that he trusted as possible to Ferrari. Purely because if you look at the history of that great team, the last person to succeed properly imported all of the staff from Benetton that he trusted, and then empowered all of the talented people around him. Michael Schumacher, you know, was able, because Ferrari was at such a low ebb in the mid-90s, he was able to dictate terms both financially and operationally. And I wonder if, I mean, it might not have been possible for Lewis, but I wonder if he would do that differently. I think that would have been enormously helpful from the confidence side, from knowing that, okay, I'm getting everything. I know my race engineer, and I'm getting everything from that department. Where else do I need to look? I think Ferrari has a history of eating up a driver's mental capacity, like we saw with Sebastian Vettel when he was very, very stressed with the strategy throughout his time there.
But you sort of risk ostracizing Leclerc then, don't you? And for me, you know, as much as Hamilton's closer than on paper, Leclerc is the number one driver of that team. I still think he is the one that, when the car's right, is going to be delivering the victory I think they'll get this year. So you could put so much weight behind Hamilton, and I'm sure Lewis has got a lot of thoughts on what Ferrari can do better. I'm sure Charles has as well. You know, they're both pulling for the same goal, even if they've got different ideas. But it's a difficult one to balance, Hamilton or Leclerc. Leclerc's been there for a long time, and he's sort of doing the better job. So you don't want to start making it look like you're galvanizing around Hamilton at this stage.
This episode is sponsored by Caldera Lab, my go-to brand for high-performance skincare designed specifically for men that's simple, effective, and backed by science. I think the biggest barrier for most men when it comes to this kind of thing is knowing where to start. That's why I'm delighted to be partnering with Caldera Lab, because they've designed a routine that actually works. I've been using their products for a while now, and what I like most is how quick it is to use and how fresh my skin looks afterwards with such little effort. You just need to know when to use them. After cleansing, kick off your mornings with the Base Layer, a nutrient-rich moisturiser that gives a smooth, matte finish. Honestly, there's zero shine, just healthy-looking skin in an instant. At night, you need something light and fast absorbing, and that's where their award-winning serum, The Good, gets to work, giving your skin a boost while you sleep, without the grease. They've also got the Eye Serum, which helps reduce puffiness and dark circles. This stuff will help you look well-rested, even when last night's choices have you feeling otherwise. And it's not just me that loves Caldera Lab products. In a recent study, 100% of men said their skin looked healthier, and over 93% felt they look more youthful after using their products regularly. Skincare doesn't have to be complicated, but it should be good. Upgrade your routine with Caldera Lab and see the difference for yourself. Go to calderalab.com/nation and use nation at checkout for 20% off your first order. There's more to come from our Zandvoort preview in a moment, but I wanted to let you know about the other official F1 podcasts you can check out this week. F1 Beyond the Grid returns on Wednesday. I'm joined by IndyCar legend and F1 TV pundit James Hinchcliffe, who tells me about his miraculous comeback from a near-fatal crash at the Indy 500 10 years ago. You'll also be able to watch our chat on the F1 YouTube channel. And this week's F1 Explains is all about pit crews with Haas. That's out on Friday. Just search for F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Explains on your podcast app. What about Mercedes? They've had a very difficult European leg so far, but did go into the summer break with a George Russell podium in Hungary. They've struggled at Zandvoort under the current regulations, other than Russell's P2 in 2022. So do you think this year's car will be better suited to Zandvoort, Jakesy?
I mean, potentially. The problem is they're just lost with that car, aren't they? They're lost with what they're going to expect from that car. I mean, Mercedes were only in contention because of that strange qualifying session that we got at the end. If we'd had a 50-degree track temperature, it would have been a McLaren front row lockout, and I think Mercedes would have been struggled to be anywhere near the podium battle. But I just think they need an understanding of how the rear end works on that Mercedes. They've been chopping and changing rear suspension all the way through. And ultimately, they just haven't had a handle on these regulations at any stage. I mean, you mentioned 2022. They thought that was going to be the low ebb, didn't they? They thought that was going to be the tricky car. They went for the wrong concept. They've gone for the same concept of everyone else, and they've still not managed to convert. I'd say that George Russell taking his chance in Canada was even more important, given the races that we've seen after, than we thought at the time. That's their race to have won, and he took his chance brilliantly there, because I don't think they're going to get many more before the end of the year.
They always have these flashpoints, don't they? Ever since 2022, and they'll have these moments, and you're like, they've got it. they've understood the car finally. Mercedes are back. And lo and behold, they're not. And they still are trying to understand what's going on with the car. I think Russell's driving at an incredibly high level at the moment. A little bit like Ferrari. They're becoming a one-man team at the moment. With Hamilton struggling, you've got Antonelli struggling probably even more. So they need to try and get Antonelli firing again to try and overhaul Ferrari in the championship. And, I mean, the same old story. They need to understand what's making their car tick. We hear all the time about the weather. It's going to be cooler in Zandvoort for what it's worth, but the correlation isn't perfect between cool weather and Mercedes winning either.
How much of a concern is it for Mercedes that they haven't managed to get a handle on these regs? Just looking ahead to 2026, new regulations coming in. You know, when did Merck last produce a championship winning car? Well, okay, they won the Constructors' Championship, of course, in 2021, but, you know, had Red Bull been a two-car team that year, maybe that would have been different. I mean, are you confident, if you're Toto Wolff, that you can come out of the blocks in 26 with everything that's gone on over these past 4 years?
It's a good question, isn't it? Because it is going to be, objectively, from their lofty standards, a failure in this regulation set. Also, the cost cap era as well. I always think that's worth chucking in there. In the old days, if you got the rear suspension wrong, you could very easily chuck a shedload of cash at it and dig yourself out of a hole. Can't do that as easily in this era. But whole paddock seems to think they're going to be the class of the field when it comes to engine regulations. So that might be the defining factor. And they're expected to have the number one power unit if you speak to almost anyone in the Formula One paddock. So that is going to go a very long way to defining them being competitive again next year, I suspect. But as for the rest of the regulations, yeah, I think there's a minor concern there because they've had a whole era of Formula One where they've only had sporadic victories.
And when you've got McLaren running the same power unit and McLaren have understood performance in this set of regulations, you think, okay, the regs, they're extremely different for next year. So that's the hope for Mercedes, is that they can scrap this line of development that McLaren and they've all been on from the Red Bull 22 year. So that will go in the bin. New regs, new looking cars, new power units. But understanding how to get performance will still be the crucial thing, even with the new rule change. So Mercedes maybe will be better off starting with everyone from zero. But McLaren have done such a good job. And if they've still got a Mercedes power unit bolted in the back, you know, they can understand the performance and go again.
You mentioned Antonelli a moment ago, JP, saying, you know, he has been struggling. It's been a difficult run of races for him since Canada. With Max committing to Red Bull for 26, it looks like Kimi and George Russell are nailed on at Mercedes for next year. Do you think that'll be a massive release of pressure for Kimi? And do you think we might, as a result of that, see a better performance?
I hope so. I if it were me in the car, it would be a huge weight off my shoulders. All of the chatter in the paddock over the summer, Verstappen's coming in. Looked like Russell would be heading out, but then George started pointing the finger at Kimi and saying, well, hang on, I'm beating him. So then you're 18 and a rookie, and you're thinking, flipping heck, this is tough stuff in Formula One. It still is, but at least he can have the confidence that he most likely will be still at Mercedes. They've given him time now. And the potential, I'm sure, is there, but he's again in this spiral that we've seen with various drivers over recent years, where he's now overthinking every time he gets in the car. He's not driving on his natural instincts anymore. We do see flashes of performance through free practice and various points in the race where you think, ah, this is what we saw earlier on in the season. But as the season's going on, he's actually comparatively getting weaker to his teammate, which is the entire reverse of what you'd expect from an 18-year-old rookie who should be learning, should be getting closer.
Well, that's a thorough analysis of the top four teams. Looking specifically at this coming weekend now, can we expect performances from any of the midfield? I mean, Aston Martin did really well last time out in Hungary. Does that give us a clue that they might be competitive in Zandvoort as well?
I think so. I think Aston Martin have got a good chance. Alonso's got good form around this circuit as well. It's a real driver's circuit. It's full attack mode, narrow, punishing, and that to me smacks of Fernando Alonso gritting his teeth and getting on with it. And off the back of an encouraging runner result, Spa was a bad outlier, but Aston are looking much better. So I'd go for Fernando being right up there again.
And Jake C, I mean, I'm loving the work that Bortoleto is doing at the moment in the Sauber.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful that the reigning F2 champion has a car to show his talent. Because I have to admit, at the start of the year, I thought he was going to be stuck on the back row of the grid and we'd refer to him in Q1 and that was going to be it. Brilliant performance. Career best in the last Grand Prix. And given how tight it is in qualifying and how tricky it is to overtake at any venue at the moment, Zandvoort is going to be very much defined by who has a good Saturday. So another opportunity there for so many in the midfield. Bortoleto's got a decent track record around Zandvoort. Hadjar has always been inspired around there. And just to finish off what we were saying about Antonelli needing confidence, he's had some of his best days in the junior formula around Zandvoort. So it's a venue he'll be happy to see.
If we were giving out awards mid-season, Rookie of the Year?
Hadjar. It's just still got to be Hadjar. But man, did Bortoleto have a good run into the summer break.
Well, JP, I'm now thinking Bortoleto.
I'm with you.
The recency bias is incredible. Well,
Jakesy.
A few races ago, we had this conversation on air and Jakesy went for Antonelli after his earlier podium and sprint pole. And I said, no, it's got to be Hadjar. It's got to be Hadjar. But now I'm on to got to be Bortoleto.
I just look at his progression over the course of the year. Okay, he started very strongly in Melbourne, didn't he? With that, I think he out-qualified Nico Hülkenberg there. But then he had some difficult races, but didn't let his head drop and has worked away at it. And he's really one to watch. And he is now, right now, my Rookie of the Year.
He's up against Nico Hülkenberg. And I think that's what sways it for me, is the benchmark. TC, you know how much I rate Hülkenberg. I can see you grinning as soon as I said that.
The career killer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you're coming from that benchmark, and we all thought that was going to be Hülkenberg's team. It's going to be tough. Meanwhile, you've got Hadjar up against Liam Lawson, who was demoted from Red Bull, hasn't got the experience of Hülkenberg. And I don't want to take away from Hadjar. He's right in the conversation. But I think the fact that Bortoleto is now kind of 8-6 up in qualifying and routinely ahead of Nico, giving actually Hülkenberg a really tough time on Saturdays. Nico doesn't understand where the performance is. Bortoleto's just ahead. He's just faster. I mean, against such a, you know, experienced, fast driver, I think that's the standout for me from Bortoleto. And he's 8 points behind Hadjar now and probably could overturn that in the last 10 races at this rate.
Jakesy, are you still with Hadjar?
I'll tell you what's going to happen. Ollie Bearman's going to go on a tear, isn't he? Enough as Rookie of the Year at this rate. No, I'm still with Hadjar. I think the way he bounced back after Melbourne would have crushed a lesser driver, and he did incredibly well to come back and rattle off the points finishes when I think most people were expecting Lawson's greater experience to tell there. I still think it's Hadjar at the halfway stage for me.
Well, guys, what a wonderful chat. Thank you both very much. You say that Zandvoort is a difficult place to overtake on, which it is, but Pirelli are going one step softer with their compounds this weekend, so that might mix it up. It was very much a one-stop race last year. Will we see more pit stops this time around? We haven't got long to wait. And how is it all going to pan out, guys? We're going to end the show with our podium predictions. Who's going to go first?
Jake's here.
I will go first with a Lando Norris victory ahead of Oscar Piastri, cutting it down to 2 points in the championship. What a barn burner. And third at his home race, Max Verstappen.
I'll flip the McLarens around. Piastri wins, Norris second, but Verstappen takes third at his home race.
Right. Why do you think Piastri will beat Norris when he was so convincing at this track last year?
Because I've fallen for it too many times this year already. I keep thinking Norris is going to do it. Because when you take the last year's form, there were only 4 qualifyings that he didn't beat Piastri. But this year, I think Oscar's just refined. And to be honest, it could be easily either one of them. But I've said too many times Lando and got it wrong this year. So I'm going to go for Oscar and probably get it wrong that way instead.
Well, it's going to be 2-1 with Lando ahead of Oscar, because I think Lando's going to do it this weekend. He's so good around Zandvoort, with Charles Leclerc third. There we go. That's my prediction. Well, guys, thank you very much. Looking forward to seeing you both in that two-part paddock in Zandvoort, isn't it? You've got the trucks behind the pit lane, and then you've got a sort of separate, almost like a village area. It's like, tell you, it reminds me of Manicourt, where back in the day you used to have to walk miles down some steps to get to where all the motorhomes were in Manicourt. And Zandvoort is a little bit like that as well. So look forward to seeing you both there.
Catch you then, TC.
Looking forward to it. One side of the paddock has the Stroop waffles, the other does not. We'll be in the Stroop waffle side, I think, more often than not.
To keep across the action in Zandvoort, go to F1.com, the official F1 app, or at F1 on social media. And in selected countries, you can watch all the racing on F1 TV. Thank you very much for listening. We will, of course, be back on Monday with our review of the Dutch Grand Prix. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.